held the staff above her head with both hands. The massive milky white breasts swung left and right indecently. It also started chanting,
"Staff is tasty! Staff is tasty!"
over and over for no good reason. Zero was becoming more and more mortified. She stared at the spectacle the same way one might stare at a hurricane. Her own oddly melodic voice was singing such an absolutely retarded tune while a mockery of her body was performing a fittingly childish dance. Eventually, she managed to tear her eyes away from whatever that was and turn away from it entirely.
"Please, just kill me now,"
she muttered sarcastically.
"Okay,"
called out the mimic in good humor. It was in a good mood, so it decided to grant the familiar this simple request. Zira, understandably, immediately tried to stop it.
"No, I didn't mean—"
But it was too late. Words spoken out loud could not be taken back.
"Shadow Bolt!"
"You have been hit by a massive darkness. HP minus 88. She screamed. That third spell to her back made her fall flat on her face.
"Hmm, still not dead?"
asked the mimic. Indeed, she wasn't. She was barely alive with only 2 HP left.
"It's okay, I fix,"
it added while walking closer to her. Zero was too busy coughing up blood and red goop to protest. She could only turn her head just enough to see her own face looking down on her with a dumb smile. Her master let out a,
"See you soon,"
before bringing down the wooden shaft of its new staff towards her head. Oddly enough, the succubus found herself mirroring that goofy smile right before the staff cracked her head open. She had realized that she was her own worst enemy. In more ways than one. Your familiar has been banished. The mimic, on the other hand, was happy. It learned a new thing and helped its snack out with a request. But then it got a bit sad when it realized it had used every last drop of its MP on that third spell. That would delay the absorption process. Not to mention it would need to summon its familiar yet again. Well, ultimately it just had to sit still and play with its coins while the automatic MP recovery did its thing. So it wasn't that big of a deal. Just to be sure, it double-checked its status, but its ruin mastery didn't budge. It seemed that using its own familiar as a punching bag wouldn't actually raise its mastery skills. Well, she was born of its own MP, so doing that was more or less like hitting itself. Which, it knew for a fact, also couldn't be used to train up skills. And so it spent the next half hour or so idly regenerating its MP while playing with the gold coins. First, it summoned back Zira and told her to keep checking the camp for anything else that looked useful. Then it absorbed one more corpse, which ended in another failure. The third one, however, was a hit. Your cadaver absorption was a moderate success. 12% of the target's highest skill proficiency has been added to your own. The body's deteriorated condition has weakened this effect by 40%. Proficiency level increased. Dagger mastery is now level 2. Strength plus 2. Dexterity plus 6. The skill itself was not that great, but the attribute gains were tasty. Now that the mimic thought about it, it was still carrying that oddly shiny dagger it had picked up when it was still level 10. It used the fake Zira's white hand to reach into its storage and pull it out. The weapon in question had a deep blue gemstone embedded in the pommel. The short steel blade glistened with an unnatural light blue sheen and a faint icy fog drifted down from it. This was a magic weapon, enchanted with the power of ice. Anyone stabbed by this would have their insides freeze over, causing additional HP damage. The downside was that it needed more maintenance than plain steel blades, not to mention it was almost 5 times more expensive. The simple mimic obviously had no idea about any of this. It was just coveting the shiny thing that looked like a tiny sword. However, now that it had the knowledge of dagger mastery, it realized this short blade was more suited to ambushing targets. It could be thrust in and out of flesh with much greater ease and speed. Zira's white, tender hand changed into a grotesque red tongue tentacle as it gave the weapon a few experimental swings. The actual Zira stiffened up when she heard the familiar swishing sounds, but felt relief wash over her when it became obvious it didn't feel like stabbing her. Well, not for the moment at least. After some more waiting around, Zira had finished checking all the belongings.
"I found a few tasty things, Master,"
she reported.
"Show me!"
it replied eagerly.
They were carrying a few low-grade healing potions. You do know what a healing potion is, right?
Yes, it confirmed. Glass thing with liquid. Gives HP when I eat it. Moderately tasty.
It was already familiar with this alchemical product. A few of those potions were present in the satchels and pockets of its previous victims and spilled out into its mouth while it chewed on the remains.
Oh, okay. Here they are.
Zira held out three crystal vials. The mimic put them in its mouth, crunched down on them, and swallowed. Just because it knew what potions were didn't mean it realized it could have saved them for later. Food was meant to be eaten before it got all rotten and untasty, after all. As for the succubus, she felt herself die a little on the inside. Just when she thought that chest would behave rationally, it proved her wrong. Her naivete proved she was still overestimating it. Or underestimating, depending on the point of view. All that was left for her to do was let out yet another sigh before continuing with her findings.
There were also two swords over there that you'd probably like.
She pointed to the unsheathed blades on the ground a few meters away from her. The simple blades looked practically brand new. The mimic was quite enthusiastic about this, as the ones it had were woefully unmaintained and horribly overused. They were blunted, rusted, and seemed like they would snap in half any day now.
I also found some more gold for you. 63 GP in total.
Next, she took out a small purse and dumped out its contents in a careless manner, causing dozens of glittering coins to pour out of it. They hit the brick-covered ground with a bit of a racket, then bounced or rolled all over the place. Rather than being annoyed, the mimic simply marveled at the sight until the last bit of gold came to a complete rest. It began picking them up one by one with great glee, carefully appraising each piece before putting it safely away inside its storage. Most of them were tiny ones, barely bigger than a thumbnail and just as thick. A good number of them were also slightly bent from changing hands so many times. These were serf pieces worth 1 GP each. The rest were about twice as large in diameter and a tiny bit thicker, not to mention shinier due to the higher degree of gold purity. These ones were called knight pieces, each of which had a value of 5 GP.
They had a map, too,
added Zira with a tinge of hope in her voice.
The thing you're looking for is actually less than a minute away from here.
However, saving what she believed to be the best news for last proved to be a mistake. The mimic was too enthralled by the shiny things to pay her any attention. Eventually, it calmed down enough to process the good news. After she repeated them, of course. It still had one more corpse to absorb, though, so it went over to do just that. Your cadaver absorption was a minor success. 12% of the target's highest attribute has been added to your own. The body's deteriorated condition has weakened this effect by 40%. The charisma attribute has been created through a special action. Charisma plus 7. It quickly verified this mysterious new addition to its status. Charisma. Slightly increases your attractiveness. If it was the mimic from 2 weeks ago, it would definitely scoff at this seemingly useless attribute. But the present one knew better. It considered how effective Snack was at deceiving others with her looks, and knew firsthand how useful such a thing could be. If it could become an irresistible treasure chest as a result of this attribute, then it would undoubtedly be much easier to fool its prey. After all, it thrived on ambushing those blinded by greed, so something like this was sure to be useful. Unfortunately, the monster was being a bit too optimistic for its own good. Even with 10,000 charisma, it would at most appear to be just a really clean and sparkly treasure chest, which wouldn't have the sort of effect on people that it was imagining. This attribute had almost no impact on how an inanimate object looked, after all. It would be a different story for someone who was naturally beautiful, however. For example, if Zira had a five-figure charisma attribute, she could make both men and women alike fall madly and hopelessly in love with her with just a glance. A wink and a smile would make them orgasm on the spot. Indeed, entire kingdoms would willingly line up to receive the honor of having their life sucked out of them by such an unimaginable beauty. In short, the only way charisma would be useful to the mimic right now was if it gained a new job that could make use of this attribute. Even if it morphed into half a Zira, the lower half of that form would be a dead giveaway to anyone with half a brain that it was a monster. Indeed, it would probably attract more oblivious customers if it just stuck with its tried-and-true chesty visage. Now that all four corpses were gobbled up and its MP was mostly replenished, it decided it was time to move out. It went over to where Zero was waiting. The bored succubus picked herself up off the ground when she noticed her master approach.
"We go," said the mimic. "Show me where the dungeon core is."
Part 4. Just as Zira had said, the heart of the dungeon was quite close by the little camp those adventurers had made. It was clearly marked on the hand-drawn map they had brought with them. A significant portion of the labyrinthine corridors had been mapped out in great detail, which looked odd considering how uneven and smudged the lines on it were. It was legible, but barely. Zira guessed this was something those four had copied for themselves, but that was beside the point. Even as poor quality as it was, the place where her master wanted to go was plainly visible. Their destination was the only unmapped portion of the dungeon, with the words "Do not enter" scribbled in the blank space. And the two of them were standing at a T-shaped junction, right on the edge of that space. Behind them was the way they came. To the right was a path that would take them nowhere in particular. The way to the left stretched out into a straight corridor that led into the uncharted heart of this dungeon. It looked pretty much exactly like the rest of the underground maze. Stone brick walls and floor, creepy statues and carvings visible along the wall, and ghostly torches providing just enough blue light to make their presence known. It was easy to see how someone might enter this place by accident if they didn't have one of these maps. Which was probably why "Do not enter" was written in large blocky letters on either side of the passage in question with an eye-catching yellow paint. Grimy and steadily peeling off, but eye-catching nonetheless.
"The core should be down this way, Master," said the succubus.
The mimic stopped playing with its expanded collection of gold coins and, much to her relief, shifted back into its combat stance, swords at the ready.
"Go in front," it ordered.
"Understood, Master."
It sent its familiar ahead so that she could be bait for any ambushes or traps. Even if she was much more fragile than itself, she could still be used as a meat shield. After all, she was expendable and her death would be an inconvenience at most. Also, the mimic was more than a little worried about friendly fire. It had plenty of opportunity to watch Zira use her magic throughout the dungeon, so it knew full well just how out of control those pyroclasm spells could get. Being in that pyromaniac's line of fire was not an attractive prospect, to say the least. So it went against the common sense of adventuring parties and put the vulnerable caster job at the front. The succubus walked about 15 meters in front of her master like she had been doing until now. However, unlike before, it was being strangely silent. She found herself looking over her shoulder a few times to make sure it was still following her. The way that animate chest followed made for a rather unsettling sight. Even the experienced demoness found the way it was quietly gliding along on those 8 spider legs to be a bit creepy. If someone were to see the two of them right now, they'd undoubtedly misunderstand the situation as a monster stalking an innocent young woman. The corridor itself went on straight for a while and had several left turns, but there were no intersections with other tunnels. Rather than a maze, this part of the dungeon was more akin to a spiral. Eventually, the corridor ended in a rather plain stone archway with a wide hall on the other side of it. The rectangular chamber was far more spacious when compared to the rest of the dungeon, more than 30 meters on each side. 4 wide stone columns were spaced out evenly around the interior, likely holding up the 4-meter-tall ceiling. And right in the middle of the room, on top of a circular marble altar, was the core. A glowing red crystal ball, roughly 1 meter in diameter. At first glance, it seemed to be sitting on top of its pedestal, but a closer inspection revealed it was actually floating ever so slightly above it. Zira entered the room boldly, her footsteps echoing throughout the chamber. Her master skittered in silently behind her shortly after. As the succubus approached the core on the mimic's orders, she heard a strange whimper and a rustling of chains. Looking to her right, she saw what appeared to be a young human girl still in her mid to late teens, chained up against the pillar. The prisoner was sitting on the ground with arms bound tightly above her head by thick, rusty shackles and chains. Her long, black, oily hair was stuck to her face, obscuring part of her features. She was wearing what appeared to be leather armor that was mostly in tatters and left much of her pale, bruised skin exposed. The odd posture she was in emphasized her moderately sized, albeit perky breasts.
"Please, help me,"
she shouted with a voice halfway between a plea and a cry.
"Sure,"
replied the adventurer with a smile on her face.
"Really? You'll release me?"
"Yep. Release you from life, that is."
"Huh? Fireball!"
The sudden spell crashed into the stone pillar, wrapping the lowest part of it in a plume of bright red flames.
"What are you doing?"
screamed the prisoner.
"I could ask you the same thing, hmm?"
In the split second between chanting the spell and it hitting its target, the black-haired girl had slipped out of her restraints and climbed up onto the pillar to avoid it. She was sticking to the smooth stone bricks while upside down with her arms and legs spread out, like a cross between a human, a frog, and a cockroach.
"Ah!"
she exclaimed after realizing the position she was in. Zira smiled mischievously.
"Good evening, Miss Dungeon Master."
The prisoner clicked her tongue disapprovingly.
"Figured me out, did you?
Please, honey. I knew the instant I heard you. You're 500 years too early to try to deceive the likes of me."
Yeah,
came the odd laugh.
"That's why I love humans. They always spout such nonsense right before..."
The girl, or rather the thing that looked like a girl, was rudely interrupted by another fireball that flew straight at her face. She leaped off the pillar and landed to the ground with a small roll, while implying Zira was prone to having intimate relations with a horse. Incidentally, there was that one time that involved a centaur, so technically speaking, she was half right. The dungeon master ran straight at the succubus, crossing the 10 or so meters between them in less than a second. She punched her in the throat to interrupt her chanting and swept her off her feet in the next instant. Zira landed on her back with a thud and a yelp, dropping her staff in the process. Her attacker immediately straddled her stomach and pinned her wrists to the floor. She loomed over her captive victim with a triumphant smile on her face.
"Right before I eat them,"
she finished. The black-haired woman's mouth opened unnaturally wide like her jaw had been unhinged. A slimy and oddly familiar tongue poured out of it. She probingly licked Zira's face, then retracted the tentacle-like organ inside herself with a smack of her lips.
Yeah, you're quite tasty, you know that?"
"I have been told that before, yes."
The dungeon master's eyes widened with surprise, and she leaped forward, releasing Zira from her grip. A trio of blades sliced through the space she was occupying mere moments before.
"Ha!"
cursed the mimic. Its ambush was dodged, and the opportunity to use assassinate was now gone. It wasted so much time maneuvering into the right position, too.
"Master!"
shouted Zira through the thought link.
"Why didn't you use magic?"
"Ah!" Zira could almost see the proverbial light bulb go off in its mind when it did that. She silently asked herself if this retard had forgotten that it could use magic, but immediately let go of that pointless question. Now was not the time for such thoughts. She quickly scrambled to her feet and picked up her staff. The dungeon master had already retreated to a safe distance of about 18 meters. The creature before them had reverted back to its base form, revealing its identity as a monster. The head, arms, and legs still retained their human appearance. Even the hair was the same unruly collection of black strands that naturally draped over her face. However, the skin was so white and flawless that one could easily mistake it for porcelain. This illusion was solidified by the pure white eyes that had no irises. However, what clearly set her apart as a monster was what she was wearing. The ruined leather trappings had transformed into what appeared to be a pile of meat and bone masquerading as a loose-fitting strapless dress. A grotesque collection of blood-red muscles, distended blood vessels, and even a few misshapen eyes covered its surface. They seemed to crawl and pulsate all on their own. The horrifying garment had a short skirt made out of red flesh that had several misshapen human-like teeth poking out of it at random. It hung down to the monster's knees, allowing the bare, pale feet underneath to practically shimmer in the dim lighting. This was indeed, as Zira guessed, the Dungeon Master. She was a flesh maiden, an intelligent and cunning shapeshifter that liked dark and damp places. Once one of these had established a lair, they would practically shut themselves inside it. It was a reclusive species that did not enjoy being out in the open at all. However, those who would dare intrude on this monster's sanctum would not be allowed to escape with their lives. which is probably why the only entrance to the room was sealed shut by a stone slab that rose up from the ground.
I see,
she said in a calm, clear monotone while glaring at the mimic.
You brought one of mine.
The monstrous woman thought of herself as the mother of all creatures in this dungeon. That notion was not entirely true, but it wasn't entirely false either. Indeed, the only reason that mimics started appearing in this dungeon was because the Flesh Maiden had taken control of its core. The glowing crystal ball that served as the heart of this place was influenced by its new owner, prompting the dungeon to spawn the only shape-shifting species of monster it could. That was, of course, merely the beginning. Eventually, the whole underground labyrinth would evolve and change to suit its new ruler, including the walls and layout of the place.
A strong one, too,
she continued.
Isn't this the same child that grew too large for this place? You're controlling it, aren't you?
Found me out, did you?
Smiled Azira. This creature in front of her was clearly misunderstanding the way their master-servant relationship worked, and the succubus had no intention of dispelling it. Her master, on the other hand, was too busy sizing up its prey to bother with the chit-chat. The thing in front of her was clearly not human, but a shapeshifter much like itself. This meant the insides were vastly different from the outside, so traditional weak points like the heart, head, throat, and lungs were unlikely to work. The Flesh Maiden reached inside the folds of her dress and pulled out a pair of mithril daggers, one in each hand. The silver-like blades glistened forebodingly with an oddly green sheen.
You whore!
She wailed while lowering her stance.
How dare you take what is mine!
She charged forward with the same abnormal speed she displayed earlier, clearly aiming to finish off the troublesome magic user first. However, she was blocked by the same trio of blades she dodged less than a minute ago. They thrust through the space she was going to be in if she didn't immediately skid to a halt. The Flesh Maiden's mind rapidly changed gears at that. Even though the swords themselves were not that great, the one wielding them could not be underestimated. If the assassination attempt from earlier succeeded, she would undoubtedly be in a bad spot. However, one does not simply sneak up on a Flesh Maiden. They're way too paranoid to trust only one pair of eyes and always have an extra two or three of them along their bodies, covering all possible angles. Indeed, she had picked out the skulking chest almost immediately, but did not expect it to attack her rather than the person she was holding down. And the mimic would do that again. It took the initiative and pressed the attack. The flurry of tentacle-guided blades struck at the Flesh Maiden, but they were all repelled. She had parried all the blows beautifully, even though she only had two blades to the mimic's three. It didn't stop there and kept swinging wildly at her, coming at her from all sorts of awkward angles. All its previous opponents were overwhelmed by this approach, but they were only human. The Flesh Maiden's arms and hands moved with superior speed and skill while bending and stretching in ways no human arm could ever manage. She was able to stand her ground against the chaotic onslaught. The two kept exchanging blows as sparks flew off and metal-on-metal clanging reverberated through the chamber. Zira was left with nothing to do in the meantime. Her master had given her a strict order to not use any magic near it, so she was unable to do anything in this situation. Indeed, the chaotic nature of her flames was one of the ways she used to accidentally torch one of her previous masters. But that was then, this was now. And right now, she was left with no way of attacking, regardless of her intentions. This was also likely the Flesh Maiden's plan, since casters would hesitate to fire on their own allies. However, it still meant that Zira was left undisturbed for the moment. She seized her chance and ran off towards the core, clearly aiming to secure her prize while the current dungeon master was held at bay. Her intentions did not slip the Flesh Maiden's notice. The dagger-wielding monster decided to kick things up a notch and stop that infuriating woman from trying anything funny. Truthfully, even though she appeared to have her hands full, she was simply taking a cautious wait-and-see approach with her opponent. Her superior speed and excellent kinetic vision gave her quite a bit of breathing room. She saw a gap within the mimic's wild swings and managed to thrust her dagger through it. The sharp blade cut into the tongue on her left, sinking in about halfway through it and causing it to stop its movements. She followed up with another strike to the same place, severing it completely. The slimy red tongue and the sword it was gripping both fell to the ground with a sputter of gooey yellow blood.
One down, two to go.
Reeling at the sudden loss of limb, The mimic didn't have time to react before the middle one was sliced off with 3 successive strikes. It realized the opponent's aim and reeled in the last tentacle while pulling back, but the Flesh Maiden would not allow that. She swung down fiercely with her whole upper body, chopping it off just moments before it disappeared inside the mimic's mouth. However, while it was by no means a bad move to disarm her opponent, she ended up narrowing her attention on the swords a bit too much. Her rushed downward swing had left her slightly off balance and within centimeters of the mimic's natural weapons. It swiftly tied its other 2 tongue tentacles around her shoulder and neck, pulling on her fiercely while lunging forward. It sank its jagged, misaligned teeth deep into her side, causing the Flesh Maiden to wail in agony. Her right arm, shoulder, and the side of her torso were all inside the mimic's maw. But so was her dagger. She thrust it upwards, piercing clean through the roof of its mouth. The mithril blade stuck out from the inside of the imitation wood like an oversized nail. Satisfied with the hiss of pain from her opponent, the Flesh Maiden tried to pull it out and keep stabbing the insides of its mouth. However, it wouldn't budge. The monster had reflexively tightened the muscles around it, locking it in place. It also wasn't quite done with the piece of meat stuck in its teeth. It reared up on its spider legs, lifting the captive Flesh Maiden off the ground. It then swung her around to its side like a wet rag before slamming her down on the floor with a disgusting wet thud. The force of the impact severed what little flesh connected the right side of its victim's upper torso to the rest of her. At least that's what it seemed like. The Flesh Maiden had willingly detached herself from those jaws, much like a lizard shedding its tail to escape. She rolled on the ground and scrambled to her feet. Her quick wits once again reevaluated the situation. While she did have the upper hand in speed and dexterity, her opponent had her outclassed when it came to raw power and durability. Facing it head-on was not impossible, but it was a much wiser decision to cut off its reason to fight. Her new position put her in a perfect spot to bypass the still reeling mimic and take care of that troublesome pyromancer. The woman in question was busy banging on the transparent pink barrier the dungeon core had thrown up to protect itself. It was an automated security system of sorts. There was no way the core would allow anyone except its rightful owner to approach it, after all. And while it wasn't capable of keeping that shield up indefinitely, it would still take a long time to break through. The Flesh Maiden made up her mind and charged swiftly at the girl. Zira noticed her approach and immediately began chanting a spell, but she didn't make it in time. The gap between them was closed in almost an instant, and a mithril dagger was stuck deep into her chest, right where her heart would have been if she was human.
"I will have you pay for what you've done," growled the Flesh Maiden while twisting her blade further inside her target.
However, the face her victim made wasn't one twisted by pain or the fear of death. Quite the opposite, in fact. She was smiling with a wide, shit-eating grin that was proud of pulling off an elaborate prank. She dropped her staff and gripped the dumbfounded Flesh Maiden's arm with both hands.
"Inferno!"
she said, finishing her chant. A swirling mass of fire enveloped them, burning away at both of their bodies. And even though they got the same treatment, they had wildly different reactions. The Flesh Maiden wailed in pain while the demon laughed maniacally. That's the trouble when dealing with immortal beings. They don't hesitate to self-destruct. It didn't help that the being in question was also a masochistic pyromaniac on top of being a summoned demon. If anything, it was a surprise she lasted an entire week since her awakening before she thought of setting herself on fire. The inferno did not last long, however. The Flesh Maiden was a resilient monster that would not give in so easily. She pulled her hand free and stabbed the succubus 3 more times in rapid succession before her HP was completely depleted, cutting the effects of the spell short. Zira's charred body fell to the ground while giving her killer the finger in a final act of defiance. It then broke apart into bright purple particles that faded away into nothingness. The mimic had already recovered as best as it could. The cut-off tentacles were regrown and the mithril dagger was safely put away into storage. It hesitated to approach the burning figure of the Flesh Maiden, however. Fire was a natural enemy of both wooden treasure chests and living things in general, so it was wary of approaching her. When Zira's devouring flames faded away a few seconds later, it revealed a shocking scene. The Flesh Maiden's burnt and charred skin was healing itself. The bitten-off portion of her torso as well as her right arm were growing back rapidly. She raised her left arm, pointing the dagger towards the mimic.
"You're next, traitor!"
she bellowed. General information. Putty. Flesh maiden. Female. 8 years old. Level 25, slime. Level 19, flesh shaper. 407 out of 407 HP, plus 0.7 per second. 619 out of 865 MP, plus 1.4 per second. Attributes. Strength, 47. Dexterity, 104. Agility, 110. Endurance, 72. Intelligence, 173. Wisdom, 93. Perception, 31. Part 5. The Flesh Maiden may have been fooled by her own hubris at first, but she quickly realized the woman she had killed was not actually human. There's no way she would have shrugged off a dagger to the heart like that if she was. The subsequent self-destruction proved that point even further. After all, humans were creatures that clung desperately to life. She respected that, though. You wouldn't last in this world without the resolve to fight tooth, nail, and tentacle for your survival. The bottom line was, that pyromancer was a monster, which meant she was actually cooperating with the mimic. The chest had attacked her out of its own free will. It may even have been the mastermind behind this little invasion into her lair. Her guess was spot on, although mastermind was giving it entirely too much credit. Regardless, it had much to answer for. She even lost one of her trusty mithril daggers to it. But that was okay. All she had to do was carve it out of its wood-like hide. And so, once the flames had subsided, the Flesh Maiden threatened the monster. Of course, that was entirely to help heal her injured ego. After all, throwing words like traitor at a moronic chest was about as useful as pissing against the wind. Leaving such stupid thoughts aside, she charged at it while swinging her dagger wildly. The mimic had already regrown its tentacles and picked up its dropped weapons, so it was ready for her. Or so it thought. The Flesh Maiden ran straight through the trio of sword strikes. One was turned away by her dagger, the second cut open her unarmed left hand, and the final one left a gash on her shoulder. She ignored the wounds and got right next to the chest-shaped body and stabbed at it with her remaining dagger. The instant she thrust her arm forward, it opened its maw and threatened to eat her whole. The Flesh Maiden was forced to stop her attack and pull back, lest she lose her other weapon as well. The sudden change in momentum made her stagger, which was just enough for the mimic to drive all three swords into her shoulder, torso, and thigh, depriving her of a devastating 235 HP. She pulled away from it in a panic, but the mimic was holding its swords with all its might and tried to pull her into the opposite direction, towards its waiting maw. The girl-shaped monster's malleable flesh was ripped apart violently, sending indeterminate bits of red flesh and sprays of crimson blood flying all over the place. It hurt like a bitch and cost her even more HP, but she managed to escape for the moment. The Flesh Maiden had to admit she was underestimating it. Even in the middle of a fight, it still found a way to surprise her with an attack that was almost enough to kill her outright. She hated to acknowledge it, but that thing's combat instincts were the real deal. Even now, it sensed her weakened state and chased after her, trying to finish the job. The huge wound on her thigh meant the normally faster Flesh Maiden could not run as freely as before, and she would surely be caught on flat ground. So she leaped at the nearby stone wall and stuck to it using adhesive slime secreted from her palms and feet. She clambered up the 4-meter-tall surface, attempting to put some distance between herself and her pursuer. Even a few seconds would be enough to pull herself away from death's door. However, the chest vehemently chased her. It skittered up the wall after her, using its imitation spider legs as makeshift climbing picks. It stabbed their hard, chitin-covered tips between the roughly hewn stone bricks, creating just enough of a hole in the aging mortar to make a foothold. It was a crude method that it thought of roughly 3 seconds ago, but it was reasonably effective. Its prey expected this development, however. After all, would it really be that strange for a half-spider, half-chest to climb along the wall? Granted, the method it used was vastly different from how actual spiders climbed walls, but that was beside the point. The Flesh Maiden stopped going upwards and instead turned 90 degrees to the right and moved quickly to the side. The rapid change in direction slowed down the determined mimic even further. Try as it might, it had no chance of catching her under these conditions. It briefly considered dropping off and firing spells after her, but it was a risky move. Its opponent already proved to be more than capable of dodging or interrupting magic, so the mimic had serious doubts as to whether it would be able to get a shot off. To make matters worse, the deep wounds it had left on that woman's body were already closing up as if time was running backwards.
"This is not tasty."
The chest knew a thing or two about shapeshifting. Replacing lost limbs or closing up wounds did not recover lost HP. The severed flesh and spilled blood both needed time to recover. Damaged tissue, on the other hand, was still there even if the wound wasn't visible on the surface. The most it could do with its current skills was to supplement the missing bits of its limbs by shifting biomass around or force its wounds closed so they wouldn't bleed as much. But what this flesh maiden was doing was beyond that. She was regenerating. It looked similar, but any shapeshifter worth its tentacles would be able to grasp the difference. She didn't simply shuffle flesh around. Entirely new muscle tissue grew rapidly on the spot, allowing her to restore both her body and her HP at the same time. Whether this effect was due to a skill, a spell, or came from the power of the dungeon core was a complete mystery to the mimic. But one thing was crystal clear.
"This situation is very much not tasty."
Once the female monster had recovered enough, she did a 180-degree turn while still clinging to the wall. She swung around one hand like she was an unreasonably fast clock and used that momentum to slice two of the mimic's front spider legs off in one slash. The animate chest, deprived of two of its anchors, lost its balance and fell towards the ground. It just barely managed to kick off the wall and rotate itself in a three-quarter circle so that it landed squarely on its legs, the missing ones already being rebuilt out of spare biomass. The flesh maiden leaped down immediately afterwards with her body in perfect health. She pressed the attack, but this time she did not rush in carelessly. She fought on the edge of the mimic's range, stabbing away at its tongues or legs. It retaliated by slashing away at her limbs in turn. It grazed her a few times but failed to land a telling blow on its quicker, more agile opponent. She didn't make things easy either, and kept running around it in circles, constantly hounding it at all sides and not giving it a single moment to rest. The mimic used its magical perception to track her position and its flexible tongues swirled around it, covering it on all sides. And while it didn't have any blind spots per se, it still struggled to keep up with her movements. And so the two reached a sort of stalemate. One ran in circles and struck at any tentacles or spider legs she could reach. The other one responded in kind and aimed at her arms and feet. It even managed to chop them off a few times, but the flesh maiden took a page out of its own book and replaced them swiftly through shapeshifting. Her seemingly endless regeneration would undoubtedly restore her HP afterwards. Severed limbs rained down in the area around them as they sliced at each other's bodies. Indeed, the surreal scene was a duel between monsters, creatures with enough vitality to fight until their last drop of HP was gone. And looking at the way things were, the mimic was undoubtedly going to be the first to fall. Even though it did almost twice as much damage as its more nimble opponent, it was still not enough. The enemy kept regenerating at a rate that was much faster than what it could dish out, but had no way of recovering its own HP. The flesh maiden had the clear upper hand in a battle of attrition like this. Then why did she not do this at the start? If she was this strong, why did she feel the need to block the mimic's blows and deprive it of its weapons? Was it because she wanted to kill off the mimic's snack? No, that was certainly the cause of it. After all, taking out the magical support first was something the mimic desperately tried to do. But Zira clearly was an offense-type caster, which meant her magic was a bigger threat.
"This is regret."
The mimic had passed on not one, but two whole chances to hit the flesh maiden with its own magic. It was possible that the high output of warlock spells might be able to overpower that regeneration, but there was no chance to use it now. The chest was under too much pressure. It couldn't focus on casting magic like this.
"Regret is not tasty."
In fact, the current situation was so untasty it almost made it want to puke in disgust. Things could not be allowed to carry on this way. Otherwise, it would surely be killed off. Therefore, it had to change the circumstances so they became more favorable. Much like how it desperately threw that spear during its struggle against the guard patrol, it needed to create an opening where one did not exist. it hastily threw together a plan that just might work, then put it into action. The first step was, essentially, the same thing it did against those guards. Over on the Flesh Maiden's side, things were going according to plan. She could only inflict 10 to 20 HP worth of damage with her glancing strikes. After all, she was slashing at thin limbs rather than stabbing at hearts, so her damage was quite low. Still, she was quite confident she wouldn't lose. Her miraculous regeneration was the product of her Mend Flesh skill. It allowed her to essentially convert her massive MP pool into HP. Like this, she was completely safe as long as her MP held out and she avoided getting in dangerous spots that could overwhelm the speed of her regeneration. In the worst-case scenario where she ran out of MP, she could still run around the room for a few minutes until she recovered a sizable chunk of it. But it would seem that was not necessary. The mimic had swung down at her with too much force and missed her completely. Its sword slammed against the ground and broke off at the handle. The Flesh Maiden smiled at this development. One sword less meant it could no longer attack nor defend as vigorously as it had until now. So far, it had managed to keep picking up its weapons with regrown tentacles while keeping her at bay with the other two, but one of those was now useless. The monster had permanently disarmed itself in its own over-eagerness. The Flesh Maiden would not let this chance slip by. She moved in closer and, while staying wary of those teeth, cut clean through one of the tentacles, albeit at the price of a sword strike to the right side of her face. It didn't deter her, and she cut off the last tentacle, drastically cutting down on the mimic's attack range. It then predictably lunged at her in an attempt to bite her, but she was well prepared for it this time. The flesh-draped woman dodged nimbly to the left, going around its narrow side where those jaws had no way of reaching her. She was absolutely sure that nothing the mimic could do would injure her in this position. So imagine her surprise when she felt a sharp pain in her right side. That last sword hit to her head took out two of her eyes that had yet to grow back. Her limited field of vision meant she didn't notice that the mimic had stabbed her with her own mithril dagger. She had completely forgotten about the little present she left inside its mouth during their first clash. But then the mimic introduced yet another dagger to the situation. This one stabbed right through her neck. A sensation of piercing cold spread through her throat as it began to ice over. The Flesh Maiden had no idea where that last weapon came from, but she didn't have time to worry about it now. The weapons lodged in her started pulling her towards the mimic, which undoubtedly wanted to eat her whole. Her instincts screamed at her to run the fuck away. So she tried to pull away, much like the last time she was in this position. The dagger lodged in her side felt like it would slip out easily enough, but the one in her throat was different. The frozen wound caused by the enchanted weapon meant it was firmly stuck in place. It was an extreme decision, but she willingly detached her head to escape from the jaws of death that were rapidly approaching her. The headless woman then ran away from danger at top speed. Most of the Flesh Maiden's many eyes were hidden inside her black hair. The only ones remaining were those on the front of her dress. She had to sacrifice her hearing, her expanded field of view, as well as a chunk of her HP to get away, but it was far better than being gobbled up. She could grow as many heads as she wanted, but no amount of regeneration would save her from being digested inside the mimic's stomach. And in a repeat of the last time this happened, she retreated up the wall. Her limited field of view was quickly rectified by several eyes that grew out of her back and shoulder. She was unused to creating eyes on those areas of her skin, so it took her an extra second to get them just right. It was important that she confirmed the distance between herself and the mimic that was likely following her. But when those eyes opened up, they revealed that she was wrong. The mimic did not chase after her. Far from it. It didn't even budge from its spot. What it did was far more unsettling. The Flesh Maiden immediately recognized the face of that infuriating pyromancer from earlier. That bitch was supposed to be dead, so how come she was sticking halfway out of the mimic? The skin, eye, and hair color were completely wrong, but there was no way she would mistake that shit-eating grin for someone else. But wait, there's more. The woman on the wall broke her tunnel vision away from that insufferable face and realized that the great white whore was pointing a cheap-looking staff in her direction, and a weird aura of crackling electricity surrounded her body. If she still had ears, She might have heard the mimic finish chanting its spell.
Ebon fire!
Black flames enveloped the flesh maiden. The impossibly dark fire that erupted from her skin seemed to suck in what little light there was in the dark chamber. The mimic couldn't even see her skin inside that localized inferno. Your target has been afflicted with ebon fire. The target in question fell to the ground, screaming like a banshee. She rolled around, desperately trying to put out the flames. But she could not, for they were coming out from beneath her skin. The mend flesh skill was working overtime to try to keep her body alive, but any new flesh that formed was immediately burned away. The heat was intense enough to overpower her rapid regeneration. Your target's soul burns away at their flesh. Target HP -140. Overcome with exhaustion, the mimic's spider legs gave out and the bottom of its chest-like body slammed against the ground. The half Azira on top of it went limp and fell forward under the influence of the accurately reproduced oversized breasts. Your target's soul burns away at their flesh. Target HP -140. Proficiency level increased. Power overwhelming is now level 2. Intelligence +4. It seemed that spending every last drop of its 520 MP in one go proved to have a side effect on its body. But it was worth it. The mimic had managed to surprise its enemy by secretly taking out an enchanted weapon from its storage. It knew that, once driven into a corner, the flesh maiden would flee at all costs, even if it meant sacrificing parts of her body to do so. A strategy she used twice already. So it aimed for her head and forced her to leave it behind. All that was to buy it enough time to prepare the nastiest attack it could muster, an ebon fire spell supercharged with the power overwhelming skill. It was a gamble, breaking its sword on purpose to lure her in, trying to get rid of those pesky eyes all over her head, pressuring her so much that she focused her whole being on running away. It was all done for this. Its one ace in the hole was that the flesh maiden did not know it could use magic. In some ways, it was glad it passed on those first two chances. A half-baked spell would have only revealed its identity as a caster and ruined any chance of pulling something like this off. That much was made clear by her impressive last-ditch effort to dodge its spell. Your target's soul burns away at their flesh. Target HP -140. However, unlike Fireball or Shadowbolt, this spell did not fire out a projectile. The mimic simply needed to focus on a target that was both within its line of sight and within range. Finishing the chant would then cause it to immediately catch on fire. The flesh maiden had absolutely no chance of pulling off a feat like dodging the chest's eyesight when she was more than 10 meters away from it. Its improvised plan to confuse and befuddle the dungeon master came to fruition. Its rewards were a terrifying amount of damage being dealt each second and an unceasing torrent of screams. Truly a satisfying result that was almost as tasty as snack. Your target's soul burns away at their flesh. Target HP -140. But now wasn't the time to laze around and bask in the afterglow. The spell was about to expire and the mimic had to be ready in case that persistent creature actually survived it. It hurriedly picked itself up off the floor and wobbled unsteadily towards the flesh maiden that was still clinging to life. Your target's soul burns away at their flesh. Target HP -140. Proficiency level increased. Power overwhelming is now level 3. Intelligence +4. Proficiency level increased. Ruin mastery is now level 5. Intelligence +2. Wisdom +1. Endurance +1. Level up! Level up! Congratulations, you are now a level 16 warlock. Intelligence +4. Mental fortitude +4. Endurance +4. But she did not make it. An increase in job levels was definite proof that something had died. And since the mimic was still very much alive, that meant it was unquestionably the winner. All that was left of the former dungeon master was a charred pile of meat that was still gripping onto the handle of her mithril dagger. The mimic felt relief wash over it. It slumped back to the ground and reverted back to a chest that was battered and splintered all over. There would be no celebratory dance this time. It was way too tired for that sort of excessive celebration. The only thing on its mind was to rest, so it naturally returned to its dormant state. The room seemed incredibly peaceful after that violent struggle. The mimic had forgotten how quiet it could get in this dungeon. Its thoughts drifted off towards the way it had lived its short life until this moment. Close fights like this were nothing new to this monster. It was forced to face off against groups of adventurers multiple times while it was still a resident of this place. Honestly, that guard patrol fight wasn't even in its top five most dangerous scuffles since it walked away with most of its HP intact. But all those close calls had one thing in common. The monster was able to overcome them through a combination of luck and its opponents fucking up in some way. It vividly remembered that one caster-type adventurer. It was busy fighting with his friend and suffered numerous wounds before it drove a sword through his chest. The caster panicked and fumbled his spell, causing it to backfire and explode in his hands. If that adventurer had succeeded, then the mimic would have died then and there. The fact all its coin tosses so far came heads up almost seemed like a miracle. Indeed, today wasn't the first time it had to fight desperately to survive, but it was the first time it achieved victory completely on its own power. There was no lucky break, and its opponent didn't trip up over herself. The mimic had driven the Flesh Maiden into a corner by using her own habits against her. It had won in a battle of wits, pure and simple. Thinking back on that intense struggle, it felt an odd surge of emotion unlike anything else it had experienced. It wasn't the joy of winning a tough battle, nor was it spite for the enemy that wounded it so badly. No, it felt a very specific feeling, one that gave rise to two words, a phrase it never even knew about until just now. It focused its magical perception on the smoldering remains of that formidable enemy, and it gave voice to that emotion.
Thank you.
It then drifted off into a peaceful slumber, which was just another in a long line of firsts that had happened today. Chapter 5. Catalyst. Part 1. The mimic woke up violently. It shot out several unrecognizable limbs from its underside that were perhaps intended to be spider legs, but they came out so malformed and unrefined that they looked closer to oversized noodles. They flailed and thrashed around for a few seconds before managing to tip the chest over and make it fall on its backside with a thud. The sudden impact with the ground seemed to snap the monster out of its haze and allow it to finally remember where it was and what it was doing there. The root cause of its distress was that it had never experienced sleeping before. This sensation of waking up was vastly different from the time it slipped into a 3-day rank-up coma. Back then, its mind seemed to wake up before the rest of its body did, which was the opposite of what happened just now. The whole slumbering monster thing was vastly different from the other times it took a break. After all, no matter how tired or hungry it was, its consciousness had never slipped out from under it like that before. It's not like the thought of resting its body was strange, but this was the first time it needed to rest its mind. Or, to put it in another way, this was the first time it had a mind that needed rest. Up until a few days ago, it was still a simple lesser mimic whose main concerns were not dying, how tasty things were, and where it could get more of the tasty things. But now it was a greater mimic, a creature that could form coherent thoughts and had a much higher capacity for learning and understanding. Complicated emotions like gratitude towards an enemy were now also within reach, and that higher performance cognitive ability demanded maintenance in the form of sleep. That's not how the mimic saw it, though. It almost felt cheated, to be honest. Why did it have to suddenly lose consciousness like that? Didn't such a thing make it incredibly vulnerable? If it knew about this sooner, it would have not allowed itself to sleep in the first place. Or at the very least, it would have wanted to have its familiar around to guard it. Eventually, it would find out that it was actually quite a light sleeper and would wake up the instant it detected something within the range of its magical perception or felt an odd vibration through the ground it was sitting on. It was just that right now, it had no idea about any of that. Such things were not present in this deathly silent chamber.
Ah!
It exclaimed. It picked itself up off the floor and stood up. Or at least, as close to standing up as a spider chest could get. It quickly scanned the room and confirmed three points of interest. The dungeon core was still there, the former Flesh Maiden was still dead, and the entrance was no longer sealed shut. Having made sure its safety was not in immediate danger, it allowed itself to relax a little. Only a little, though. It still had things it had to do. First of all, it leaped up in the air and did a backflip, then performed a few stretches and trial shapeshifts to make extra sure everything was in working order, which seemed to be the case. Its body actually felt strangely refreshed and full of energy. If these were the after effects of a good night's rest, then perhaps sleep wasn't all bad. Well, it was still only day two in its life as a greater mimic. It would need more time to get used to its new species. There was still the matter of the Flesh Maiden's corpse, though. It went over to it and tried to use cadaver absorption, but the skill failed to activate. Even if she did have a heart and brain, they would have been completely destroyed by the Ebon Fire spell. Her body was in such a horrible state that the mimic didn't even want to eat it the old-fashioned way, which was a shame considering that the few pieces it bit off her during the fight weren't half bad. Perhaps a bit juicier than it preferred, but tasty all the same. It felt better about it when it remembered to take her other mithril dagger, though. That one clean stab she got on the inside of its mouth did a whopping 130 damage to its HP. It was therefore looking forward to seeing if these new weapons would serve it well. These weapons also had the added benefit of being shiny. Mithril was technically a precious metal also known as white gold, so the mimic instinctively felt a certain amount of satisfaction.